Today, as the holiday season kicks into high gear, we check in with Eastern Illinois Food Bank to find out how they're serving families in need this time of year. And we're also thinking about the holidays with a focus on technology. First, we've got tips on how to be tech support for your family members this season.
My dad called me. He said, I just got a call from your company. They said that there was a virus on my computer, so I gave him my credit card. They charged me $65 to clean it out. But since then, I've started to see some really weird charges. Do you think that one has to do with the other? And I said, oh my gosh, Dad, yeah, you've been had.
That's Microsoft's Adam Hechtman. He joins us. Also, advice on giving tech-related gifts.
When you're going to visit your family for Thanksgiving, take a look around and see what they don't have. When you're giving tech gifts in general, that you really need to give a gift of your time, helping them set it up.
That's the Wirecutter's Mike Burke on how to choose the best tech gifts this season. It's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. It's the holiday season. For many people, that means spending time with family, enjoying some great meals together, and exchanging gifts. Later on in the hour, we're going to give you some recommendations for the best tech gifts. But first, for many of us, heading home means stepping into the role of unofficial tech support for your family members. Maybe your mom accidentally installed malware into their computer, or your dad's Facebook account got hacked. That happened to me this past weekend. Or your Uncle Joe can't figure out how to get his new printer to work with his old computer. Well, what we thought we would do for the first part of today's show is call in a few tech experts to help us out, share their own experience of stepping into this role for family members. Joining me now from Chicago, Adam Hechtman is Microsoft's Director of Technology and Civic Innovation from Chicago. Also on the line from Chicago, Veronica Areola is an expert on women in tech. She described herself as a professional feminist, speaker, writer, and geek. Her day job is at UIC, where she leads an effort promoting Latinos in science. Adam, Veronica, hey guys, welcome to the 21st. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Island to you as well. And to you, Veronica.
Me too.
Thanks, guys. Adam, let's start with you. What kind of unofficial IT situations do you often find yourself in when you go for home for the holidays? I imagine also the fact that you work for Microsoft means kind of like people are probably constantly telling you these things. But I imagine the holidays are kind of a special time of year when your family members are also doing this, right?
Oh, it's a special time of the year for my family members, for my neighbors, for anybody who remotely has ever met me. I get calls from a lot of people to be their tech support. And by the way, Nyla, you'd mentioned you had an issue with somebody being hacked into Facebook, somebody, your Uncle Joe couldn't get into his printer, somebody downloaded malware to mom. I experienced all of those things over the last maybe 6 months.
Wow.
Not on my computer, of course, on my parents' computer.
Sure. And Veronica, what about you? I feel like you've probably had situations where you've had to kind of help people out.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm not at Microsoft, but people know I'm pretty tech savvy, so they know I can really figure out their problems. So I've definitely, you know, put together computer systems out of the box for my parents back in the day. My in-laws got some a computer as well and had to set up their DSL line and talking, making sure that that printer that they got secondhand talks to their computer that's a couple of years old, and, you know, being able to make sure that everything, all the software is up to date, all the drivers are there. Usually a lot of communication between different devices.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we've been asking folks to share their stories. They've been sharing with them on Facebook. You can tweet to us right now at 21STShow. If you want to share a story or offer some advice, you can give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. I know on Facebook, I was hearing a story of a friend saying that they had to, for their godmother, it's sort of like a constant TiVo support and resetting TiVo. Let me start with you guys. Let me ask you about the news that we saw about Yahoo in the most recent hack, and just ask you guys for advice for people who ask you about this. What kind of advice do we need to think about in terms of email security, accounts being hacked, especially the news of Yahoo with all of the headlines we saw yesterday about how many more email accounts have been hacked than we thought originally? Adam, what do you think?
I think that when you're talking to friends who may be less technically savvy than you, it's important to understand the social engineering aspect of this. A lot of times, and this probably wasn't the case in the Yahoo case, But a lot of times people will get their individual information stolen by somebody who's either tricked them into disclosing their account information or other personal information by an email that looks like it was coming from somewhere legitimate. So teaching people to be aware, to be suspicious, and to never, ever enter things like social security numbers or credit cards unless they are absolutely certain they know where they're going.
Veronica, what tips do you have for sort of basic education tips for maybe for everybody? You know, because I think the other thing is I think we often think that we have people who are highly educated, intelligent people who sometimes when it comes to technology, it just sort of becomes either a mental block or obstacles. What are your tips for sort of helping educate people about, for example, let's just start with being careful online, whether it's emails or other phishing scams or whatever?
Yeah, definitely. I think that some people just get a mental block. They just freeze up. Like, I'm not a techie. But some of these things can be really simple. So things that I like to talk about, it, especially yesterday after the Yahoo News broke, is those security questions that you get asked. You know, everyone asks about your mother's maiden name or your first dog, those sorts of things. And those are also things that we kind of talk about with friends and especially on social media. There's always those memes about, you know, your metal band name is like the name of your dog plus the street you lived on. Well, those are two security questions that most sites ask. So I actually make up things for security questions. So who was your best friend in elementary school? I might pick, you know, and smush up two of my best friend's names.
Oh, okay. Or maybe you should, pick a Muppet or something.
Something like that. So instead of writing Nyla Boodoo, I might be like Nyla Miller. So that even if someone were to figure out we were besties, they wouldn't be able to use it as a security answer.
Yeah, Adam, passwords are really tough. How do you recommend people remember passwords? I will not say who, but I will say one of our 21st production staff members has a parent who has opened multiple email accounts because she forgets the password. And so she was saying how every year her mother opens a couple email accounts because she just can't remember the password. How do we think about that?
Well, there's a lot of different ways to remember a password. I mean, taking something that you would normally remember anyway, a title of a song, a line from a poem, whatever, but mixing it up with capital letters and lowercase letters and numbers and characters may be helpful. I'll tell you what not to do. About 4 years ago, I went over to my parents' house, and on my dad's desk was a binder, and he had typed out on a label maker the word passwords and put it on the binder, and I opened up the binder.
Sure enough, it was all of his passwords. So how are you going to remember them, Adam? Can I be honest? I'm the worst of this. Like, where are you supposed to put your passwords?
So I am too. And one of the things that has intrigued me is that there are some services like 1Password and LastPass.
I forgot my LastPass password, right.
Right. And those sites give you create a single password, but they create multiple encrypted and changing passwords for all your sites. And that seems to be logically and intuitively, although I haven't actually dive deep into them, it seems to be a good way to go if you're not comfortable remembering a lot of passwords.
Veronica, what's your system for remembering passwords or helping people remember passwords?
I do exactly the thing. I have a saying or a pattern for them. I also do a trick that I learned years ago about having something like a saying and using the numbers and symbols, but then adding like a Y at the end because that's my Yahoo password so that it ends up being unique for everyone.
It
might be G at the end for Google or M at the end for my Microsoft login. So I try to keep a strategy, too. It's also important to change that every now and again. Yeah, definitely. There's a pattern, but a strategy, and so that I can try to remember them. Because, we have a lot of passwords.
We're talking about tech tips, especially if you're playing the role of unofficial IT for your family this holiday season. Whether or not you know about IT, Nate just tweeted that he became a techie by learning how to search forum for answers. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to Casey in Lincoln. Hey, Casey, welcome to the 21st. What story did you want to share?
Hey, Nella, thanks. I actually had gotten to do some really like high level satellite communication stuff in the military and very, very smart nerdy things. And it amuses me when I come home, everybody, you know, especially parents and grandparents are, you know, hey, my computer doesn't work. How do you fix it? And I always laugh and I remind myself of the IT crowd quote, you know, hey, have you tried restarting it? And which is usually the first problem, you know, you go to that. But what really intrigues me, especially this last couple of years, is this the Internet of Things, so to speak. I put in a Nest thermostat in my home, and then my parents saw it, were really intrigued by the fact that you can change it remotely. And so, of course, they go and get a Nest, and then the cameras, and then the Google Home system, and just everything like that. It's just wild to me.
Yeah, thanks for that, Casey. We're going to be talking about tech gifts later on in the hour, but it does kind of bring up the idea when we're thinking about all of these wired products within your home. Adam, I wonder if there are products that you think can kind of help, apart from the Internet of Things, because that's, I think, a whole other issue of support that needs to happen. How do you do when you're doing sort of remote support for people, especially if you're thinking about people who are not, if your family members are far away, how do you handle that? Because it's sort of one of these things where you want to set things up when you're in person with someone, but when you're in between those times, do you have some good tips for that, Adam?
I do. I'll tell you what I do. For my family, you know, some of my family use Skype, and so I use Skype desktop sharing to let them share their desktop on their side so that I can go in and do things on my side. And there are also applications that are specifically designed to do that. Another one that I like is Instant House Call. Instant House Call allows you to do remote support. And so there's a number of these remote support
tools that are out there. And so does that let you take control of their screen?
Yes, it does.
Oh,
it lets you take control of their screen and do things for them. But again, you know, my go-to space is Skype because they already are using Skype. So it's not a big stretch for them to do desktop sharing. But then these tools like Instant House Call, it basically, when you want to start a session with them, it sends them off an email and says, hey, your son, Adam, wants to do this. Click here. I get really... I make sure that before I do that, I explain to them, this is coming from me. This is the only one I'm sending you. If anybody else sends you something that says, click here and I will help you, it's not me. It's just this one, and it's just for this period of time.
Yeah.
I don't want them to get too used to doing that.
Right, right. And that's the thing. And I think that's a great thing, because I was having a situation with a family member trying to do tech support via FaceTime this past weekend. And I will tell you, that did not go well. That was really tough because I was trying to get the camera pointed at the screen and I was like, this is not going well at all to help solve this Facebook account that has been hacked.
Right.
And when we think about that, I mean, I wonder, Adam, just in terms of being careful, I think there are a lot of times that people disguise themselves as tech people and then they scam you. That actually happened with your dad, right?
It did. Maybe 2 years ago, he called me up and he said he was having some problems with his visa. And he said, I wonder if it's related to the call I got from Microsoft. And I said, Microsoft doesn't call you. What happened? He said, well, somebody called me from Microsoft. They saw that I had a virus on my computer. And they said that they suspected it was just this one virus, but they have to go on my computer and check. So they went on my put some stuff on my computer, and I can see him checking, and I can see all the numbers flying by. And he said, oh, yeah, you are just full of malware. And he said for $65, he could take care of it. So a guy who didn't have malware before had malware then and was charged $65 for the privilege of it. And, of course, then once they had his credit card, there was a lot of different things. So we canceled the credit card, and I cleaned off the malware. And this is all too common of a scam. And unfortunately, it targets seniors. It targets some of the more vulnerable members of the tech community. And it's something that you, when you give up a present of technology for the holidays to your parents or to your Uncle Joe, make sure that they know to stay safe.
Mm-hmm. Veronica, so there's the security aspect of it, and then there's sort of, which I feel like we've spent a lot of time on, and then there's sort of the helping aspect, right? And I wanted to ask you, we've been having conversations with people about this on Reddit the past couple of days, particularly in IT forums, about how they handle this, especially if you are in IT. And someone said that unless it's his parents, everyone else, he has two rules, that if something needs to be fixed, they have to bring it to his house and that he'll get to it when he gets to it. Do you find like setting rules like that are helpful?
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, I honestly haven't been asked by a lot of people outside of my family to play tech support. Maybe in the office I will, and then I'll just walk over to their desk and help out, things like that. I will say that, you know, especially with, at home, with my husband, I'll just take the device and just do it instead of walking him through it.
But is that a problem sometimes that you just do it because it's faster instead of teaching someone?
Yeah, definitely. My rule of trying to be patient and walk people through step by step is definitely blown sometimes.
Okay. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. We're talking with Veronica Ariola. She's an expert on women in tech. Her day job is at UIC. She leads an effort on promoting Latinos in science. My guest is also Adam Heckman. He's in Chicago as well, where he's Microsoft's Director of Technology and Civic Innovation. You can keep the tweets coming. You can give us a call as well if you want, 1-800-222-9455. You can post on our Facebook page, and we'll pick up this conversation in just a few minutes. By the way, our Twitter account, our Twitter handle 21st show, during the show we're tweeting out different context articles, things we're talking about, and when we're not on air, it's a great source for Illinois news. So if you want to follow us at 21st show, that's our Twitter handle. Stay tuned, you're listening to the 21st. Thanks for tuning in to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. As the holidays approach, we're talking about folks who are thrown into unofficial IT roles for their family members during the holidays, how to handle that. People have been sharing their stories. They've been sharing their advice. Thanks to Nate, who just tweeted to 21st show, a really funny flow chart for how you become a local tech support. So if you follow our Twitter handle, we just retweeted his very funny flow chart. You can give us a call if you want to share a story really quick. We're going to have the conversation for the next few minutes. 1-800-222-9455. My guests are Microsoft's Adam Heckman. He's the Director of Technology and Civic Innovation in Chicago. Veronica Ariola leads an effort on promoting Latinos in science at UIC. She's also a self-described, Veronica, I love your Twitter handle. It says professional feminist speaker, writer, and geek. Is that accurate, Veronica?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
Can we talk about resources for a minute, guys? Because I think that other than the obvious, which is sort of like Nate's flowchart that he just tweeted, which is we're just looking through our own forums or Googling things for ideas, which is frankly what I always end up doing when I'm trying to help someone. Adam, where other places do you point people specifically for resources for learning about technology themselves? Where else can people get help?
Well, do you remember McGruff the crime dog? He takes a bite out of crime?
Yes,
remember
I
him?
Do remember McGruff.
There is actually some good resources specifically to keep seniors safe from McGruff, and it's on NCPC.com. That stands for National Crime Prevention Council.
The National Crime Prevention Center?
NCPC.org. Yeah, NCPC.org. And of course, you can go to Microsoft.com/security to see some tips.
Okay.
So National Crime Prevention Council and Microsoft.com.
Okay, we'll tweet those links out as well.
You.
Yeah, thanks for that. So can we shift to Veronica, any other resources or ideas for where you think people should be looking for help?
I usually just go right to the source, to the if I'm working on an HP printer, I go to the HP site. I feel like if I'm searching somewhere else in secondhand places, I don't always get the best results or it can
reliable results, too.
Because sometimes you have to download driver, so you want to make sure you're downloading from reliable sources.
Adam, let me ask you a question, because we've been talking about resources and technical help, but how much of this do you think part of this is also helping people get over maybe a mental block? As I mentioned, I mean, we have a lot of people who are highly intelligent, highly educated, capable people, but somehow when it comes to the web or the internet or other technology, they just kind of seem a little flummoxed. How do you work on that?
This has been the experience I've had with my parents, and now they're very comfortable with technology. My approach to that is teach them one thing, just one thing that they may be able to get a handle on. Maybe it's email, maybe it's Skype or FaceTime or one of those things. Teach them one thing and then give them a little bit of time to get comfortable with that. And then you can start broadening them out a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, my mom's the WhatsApp expert. My mother's the WhatsApp expert in our family because she uses it to communicate so much. I feel like she knows it better than we do. Yeah. So I guess is it picking something? And I think particularly if it's grandparents, kind of like, let's work on FaceTime or Skype. So then you can kind of, they know that technology, that's something that they're using more often. Is that a good way to go?
That's a great way to go because it's something that they're going to see immediate value out of, and communicating with family is the value that they see out of that. And that'll get them at least comfortable, if not curious.
We're about to discuss the best tech gifts this year. I'm wondering if each of you can share, what's the best tech gift you like to buy for people over the holidays? Do you have a generic one? I know this can be a very specific question. Veronica, you want to start?
You know, I don't actually have a tech gift. I'm really identifying. I feel like I have a lot of techie people, really geared up people in my life. So, most of my gifts are going to be pretty non-technical.
They're going to be non-technical. Okay. Adam, what about you?
I've actually been stocking up on Windows 10 computers. I've gotten a few of the Microsoft Surfaces, but I've also been picking up some of the PCs and tablets from some of the other vendors because they're relatively inexpensive. They're under $400.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Adam Heckman is Microsoft's Director of Technology and Civic Innovation for Chicago. Veronica Ariello is at the UIC. She leads an effort on promoting Latinos in science. Happy holidays, guys. Thanks for being with me.
Happy holidays.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
We wanted to keep our tech theme going by talking about presents, whether that's for family or friends. Our next gift is here to make that a little bit easier for you, especially the best tech to buy as gifts this holiday season. On the line with us from Connecticut is Mike Burke. He's the executive editor with The Wirecutter. That's an online consumer tech review site. Earlier this year was purchased by The New York Times. Mike, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You know, as we're talking about people, we were just talking about people who can help their parents with tech and IT devices during the holidays. I wonder if you have a philosophy about, especially if we're thinking about tech gifts for family, what kind of things you think people should buy?
Well, you know, I actually think going back to that discussion, a lot of what you were talking about plugs directly into thinking about tech gifts, you know, the trouble that, you know, parents or non-tech savvy family members might have setting things up or keeping things current or dealing with passwords. I mean, those are all things you really have to keep in mind if you're going to give someone technological products for the holidays, because you don't want to invite trouble. And I think the rule that we live by when we're advising people on gifts is that if you're going to give a tech gift, you got to make sure to give the gift of your time along with it. I mean, you're probably going to be called upon to set it up and maybe to maintain it in some way.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And I think you also need to, I guess, in that sense, when you're thinking about purchasing gifts, if you're not in a place where you can provide support in person, you also need to think about that when you're buying something as well.
Yeah. If you're not going to be able to do it in person, you might want to think about things you can do remotely. There are definitely ways you can keep up with someone's tech needs for a particular object from a distance. You know, I was thinking of one gift that we recommend this season, which sort of an interesting one, kind of aimed at parents or grandparents, with a digital photo frame. Seems like something that you might not want, but, you know, parents and grandparents and uncles and aunts and anyone else love to see photos of family members who may be far away. And we found a few that are actually very easy to administrate remotely.
So, oh, right. And so it's not, this isn't like the old, option. Right. This isn't like the older version of like plugging in a thumb drive. These are sort of wired.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. You can, you know, once you get it attached to someone's, you know, network, you can set up a shared folder in Dropbox or any other shared services and just drop files in from wherever you might be, whether you're on vacation or at home or whatever, and it'll end up in the stream on their photo frame.
So if people are a little behind... Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, you still have to go through making sure that, they have their account set up and all that. But once that's done, it's, a nice tech gift that keeps on giving. You can't really achieve the same thing any other way.
Yeah. And so that's a good one because that's like a digital photo frame that works really well for lots of people. If you are really behind and you haven't thought about gifts for someone, how do you go about thinking about choosing a tech gift for someone in particular? What's your advice for that?
We did a little piece on this a little while back, and it may be a little bit too late for someone who's deciding on gifts right now, but our advice was actually to do a little bit of snooping around the house come Thanksgiving and think about that for the end of the year, your gift giving. It's a little bit of a sneaky thing to do, but it's a good way to do a sort of assessment of what your relatives might need.
So you guys So you guys have great guides on your site. We'll tweet out those links as well. If you follow 21ST Show, we'll tweet out some of those. And I want to get into specific gift ideas, especially there's stuff for kids, people who are tech savvy, people who aren't. But before we get into that, can you guys explain how you do reviews at Wirecutter? Because I think a lot of people always have questions when they see consumer product review sites, sort of how that works editorially and how. Can you explain your editorial process for reviews?
Our approach, at the core, is simply to make shopping less painful for people. We want to avoid making people plow through, a lot of different websites to do a lot of comparison shopping at different retailers. We try to eliminate the problems of that approach. So every review we do is aimed at making a recommendation of this is the best thing to buy in this particular category. And then we'll have a few alternates, for people who might need specific things, And our testing process is a mix of lab testing, if, the product demands it, some audio products or video products, batteries, things like that actually demand to be, put on a bench and checked out thoroughly. And then we also try to use stuff in the real world. And we always test things in the long term, and we continually update our guides. Once we publish something, we don't leave it be. We go back and update it every 6 months or every year or on whatever kind of cadence makes sense. So we try to always have up-to-date content and make it so people can click through and find a good price on it as well.
And just to be clear, the companies don't pay you to review products, right?
No.
Okay.
No one pays us to review products. We're strictly an editorial operation. We do make money via clicks for affiliate links. So, we get a tiny percentage of, the purchase price on the back end. That's how we stay in business. That's also how we avoid taking advertising.
Great. Okay, so we got that out of the way.
We think it's a better model.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's so everyone knows how you guys do things at Wirecutter. Let's get to specific gift ideas, because you have some great kids-oriented gift guides where you recommend STEM toys in particular. What are your favorites for children who are interested in technology?
Well, we put together, this is actually something, we have a lot of parents of younger kids on staff, so this is an idea we're developing this year. And we had our writer go and work with a team of educators and test toys with kids. And we came up with a lot of things that we think are really great. And a lot of them have since been purchased by a lot of our staffers for their own kids. It kind of depends on, the age of the child. I think there are, for younger kids, for toddlers who are probably too young to really get into things like coding, despite STEM being all the rage now, we found a lot of interesting puzzles and building toys. Magnetic tile assembly toys are really popular this year, and they're very. If you want to look at it from an educational perspective, they really develop an awareness of space and shape, which can be really interesting later in life. And there are a few toys that are based around different sorts of joints and gears and other kind of mechanical relationships, and we think those are really cool as well. Once you get into kids who are a little bit older, kids who are teenage, kids who are entering school age, things like Little Bits, which is a really easy to assemble circuit set. You can build a whole lot of things out of it. They come in different kits aimed at, you know, music.
Yeah, what age do you think?
At
what age? Yeah, what age do you think kids can start into sort of building their own computers and those sorts of things? Like, I mean, obviously it depends on the each child's individual ability, but how young would you, if you have a kid who's pretty tech savvy, how young would you start a kid on, or if you're thinking about?
I think a tech savvy kid, you know, it depends on how tech savvy. Some kids are surprisingly tech savvy these days because they start out with, you know, iPad or, you know, Android tablet apps when they're very young, like, you know, preschool, pre-kindergarten. So those kids understand, you know, what's involved in using technology from the very beginning. I think in one way, these toy kits are better because they develop an understanding of what's involved in technology beyond the screen. Like, there's a great system of toys called Snap Circuits, which is a easy to assemble, no solder, you know, no stripping wire electronic set. Comes in a bunch of different varieties that, you know, really teach you about signal flow and electricity and all these kinds of things, you know, that make the stuff that flashes lights and animates things, you know, accessible in a real way.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. And what about teenagers? What about older? I feel like that's a really hard age. Are there kind of good sort of tech gifts that you can give for teenagers that are also maybe in this realm but age appropriate?
You know, I think the way to go for kids who are a little older, we don't really address teenagers in the stuff we're looking at because, you know, really teenagers, depending on where they're at in life, are much like adults.
Right. I was going to say it's
and
a similar.
A lot of them.
Right.
There are a lot of great programming environments, you know, to work through now. You know, Apple has their, you know, Swift environment now, which you can put on an iPad and an older kid can have a lot of fun, you know, learning to do real work in that environment. Robotics kits, I think, are really cool for kids who are a little bit older or even younger kids who are, you know, more and more tech savvy. There's a lot of inexpensive, you know, pretty expandable modular kits. You know, we recommend the MakeBlock MBot in this guide, but there are a lot of other ones. Lego Mindstorms, which has been around for many years, you know, you can expand that to a real programming environment. A tech-savvy, you know, 8-year-old could start with that and probably be doing cool things with it well into their teens.
Let's talk about adults for a minute. We just have a couple minutes left, but I wanted to ask you about, it's tricky, I think, if you're trying to buy a present for someone you don't know that well. And I wonder if you have advice on what not to buy someone if you don't know them very well as a tech gift.
I would not buy something overly complex, like something that requires a lot of accounts, logins, or something that needs to integrate with like a particular ecosystem. Like, I don't think I would want to buy someone who I didn't know a phone or a tablet or a media streamer even, simply because I don't know their habits well enough. I don't know exactly what isn't, like, how savvy they are about using the technology, and I don't want to necessarily have to make them call me to set it up.
Yeah, that's a good point. Right, back to our earlier conversation. One last question you. Yeah, one last question for you, Mike. We had a caller earlier talking about the Internet of Things, and I wonder, as we've seen, like, all these Google Home products and stuff like that this year, is that kind of the most popular tech gift that we're seeing this year? Is people?
Yeah. Echo and Dot and, you know, the other voice-controlled speakers are phenomenally popular. I think Amazon now is actually the leading vendor and manufacturer of speaker products in the United States, simply on the strength of Echo. I mean, it's like probably the most transformative tech product in AV since the iPod. Has sort of happened without anyone noticing. That's it. I'm not sure I necessarily want to buy one for someone I didn't know, for a relative, and, you know, I could spend a little time helping them set up. I think it's a great idea. They're incredibly useful. If you want to get someone started in smart home, though, I would go with something a little bit more low impact, maybe set it to smart light bulbs, smart garage door opener, that kind of thing. Maybe it's a little less romantic, but
yeah, but lots to choose from.
Into the smart home area.
Yeah, thanks so much.
There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, there's so much on there. Thanks so much for joining us. Mike Burke is executive editor of The Wirecutter. We'll tweet out all of their guides if you follow 21ST Show. Thanks, Mike. Happy holidays.
Thank you very much. Happy holidays to you.
Well, Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. All this week, we've been talking about need across Illinois, whether it's children with COATS, special needs that low-income students have regarding education. Today, we thought we would check in with Eastern Illinois Food Bank to talk about how they're doing this holiday season. In studio with me is Teresa Brown. She's a partnership manager. Hi, Teresa. Welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us on again. I appreciate it.
I can't help but think, Teresa, when the weather dips down to the temperatures that we're seeing, I've been thinking a lot about my heating bill. I keep cranking the heat up just because I can't handle the cold weather. But what kind of impact does this weather have on families who were struggling financially when they're thinking about weighing holiday shopping, utility bills, and then food costs?
It really does put an additional burden on a family struggling to make ends meet. Any of us, as you just mentioned, who've been, you know, paying your power bill, especially when the weather dips down like that, it really stretches your resources. Take into account, you want to provide for your family a nice, you know, a nice Christmas for your kids over Thanksgiving and Christmas. We also have school breaks. So you have your kids at home. So you're keeping that thermostat up higher. Your heating bills are higher. You're also trying to provide for them, again, three meals that they might
be
getting at
school. You're feeding a lot more, too.
You are, and you're feeding more. So it does put stress on those already thin resources.
And last time you were on, you were actually here when we were talking about food programs specifically for the summer. What happens over holiday break in terms of children who are normally eligible for free or reduced lunch? Are those children sent home with any food over the holidays? Are there resources available? Or is Eastern Illinois Food Bank, is that when you're seeing more families come in?
You know, it's interesting that you say that. There are some great programs that operate throughout our 17-county area. Locally, we have an agency partner, Feeding Our Kids, which I'm sure many of your listeners have heard of, that provide backpacks for school children to take home on the weekends. So they do those over the holiday breaks as well to make sure that the kids are going home with something. We do see that spike in our pantries and with our agency partners and soup kitchens for a variety of reasons, whether it be, again, that the kids are home and they're needing that program, or with this cold weather, with the soup kitchens are also used as warming stations where people just trying to get in out of the elements and you know, stay warm and then also get some food and other resources while they're there.
Right. So you're finding, especially I imagine this time of year, I know this happens year round, but that food pantries end to be of a resource, not just for providing food, but other resources for people as well.
Absolutely. So many of the food pantries offer above and beyond food. You'll find resources for local emergency shelters, for warming stations, for maybe they need help with LIHEAP or heat bills. So they are really community centers in a more, you know, current phrase of the word, where, you know, it used to be every small community had one where someone could go and find that help. And we're finding that our agency partners and pantries and soup kitchens are turning into that resource for people.
And maybe you can remind for everybody, Eastern Illinois Food Bank, as you said, you work with partner agencies. You don't necessarily, you're not directly serving clients like a soup kitchen. How many people are you, how many different partner agencies are you working with? And you said across multiple counties.
We have about 200 agency partners across 17 counties. So throughout the course of the year, through these different agencies, we help serve about 16,000 people, 116,000 people a year.
Can you also remind us, I think when people think about the poverty rate and they think about what that looks like, people tend to focus on thinking that may be something that's concentrated in, say, the Chicago area or Cook County. What does the poverty rate in Champaign County look like, for example, compared to Cook County?
You know, that is such a great question, because many times people do associate the poverty level with their larger cities. And actually, the poverty level in Champaign County right now is about 22.3%, which is actually higher than Cook County's 16.9%. The difficulty is also in many of our communities in our, you know, in our county area, they're rural. So they don't have that immediate access to hop on a bus line or, you know, get in a cab or grab a train to get to that resource, maybe a grocery or a pantry or something like that to help them out.
I'm speaking with Teresa Brown. She's the partnership manager for Eastern Illinois Food Bank. And I wonder if you can give us an idea, as the year is wrapping up, how much food have you all provided for agencies this year?
You know, we are so blessed with having retail partners that donate food to us. We also purchase product. Then we have manufacturers. We've distributed about 8.6 million pounds of food to our neighbors in need, including 1.6 million pounds of that is fresh produce.
Wow.
And how does it work this time of year for the winter? I mean, in terms of fresh produce, where is that coming from?
You know, a lot of it, again, is coming from our retail partners. We get donations from, you know, the grocery stores that we have in our communities, everyone from Meijer and Walmart, County Market, Sam's, Newell, Super Value, that are located right here in Champaign, you know, Kraft, and then also canned fruits and vegetables that are wonderful because they do, you know, they are still providing those nutrients and those vegetables, but they aren't immediately perishable.
And do you accept, how does it work for people who want to help you all with individual donations?
You know, we love the spirit of the season. You had touched on it earlier where November, December, that Thanksgiving and Christmas, the generosity of spirit really kind of tends to strike in people's hearts where they want to maybe do a canned food drive or something like that. And I think those are wonderful, especially if you can get your kids involved. However, nothing goes further than a monetary donation. For instance, if you donate a dollar to Eastern Illinois Food Bank, with our buying power, we can turn that into $10. So you can go to the grocery store and buy, you know, a couple cans of macaroni and cheese for a dollar, or you can give us that dollar and let our buying power stretch that out and actually buy more.
Well, and I think it's this is the time of year that people obviously, I think, spend a lot of attention to things like food pantries and soup kitchens because it's the holidays. But ironically, this isn't actually your busiest time of year for clients, is it? When is your busiest need?
You know, again, during this holiday season, it is top of mind. Everyone wants everyone to have the same holiday experience they have. But people are hungry 365 days a year, and they'll continue to be hungry in January and February and March, as we, you know, they're just as hungry in the summer and in the spring as they are during this time of year. And while the idea of, you know, donating that ham or that turkey does feel good when you do that, you know, with that spirit of generosity, maybe the family, you know, maybe they don't have the resources. Maybe they don't have an oven or a stovetop or the knowledge to prepare that food. And something a little bit more smaller scale might benefit them.
Mm-hmm. What have your partner agencies seen this year in terms of need? I know in the past when we look at need across food pantries, obviously that relates to the economic situation. You can sort of look at jobless rates and sort of see needs among food pantries. What does it look like with your partner agencies in terms of how is the need this year compared to previous years?
You know, the need is always there. Our partner agencies, we have so many and they're so varied. We have senior feeding programs. So we are seeing the need with senior citizens, you know, that can't get out. And so we still have that need there. We have the kids that need to be taken care of. We have individuals that are homeless or indigent that have a need all of their own, where it might be, you know, a special pack style of something that they can carry in their backpack, which, you know, Daily Bread Soup Kitchen does a good job of taking care of here locally. So the need is always there. And I always like to say the face of hunger, there's not a face to it. It's we are all just a couple of quick steps away from needing that assistance. So it could be someone that, you know, that you're passing on the street every day.
Mm-hmm. How has the, I wonder how, you know, we've spent so much time this year talking about the state budget situation and that impact it's had on social service agencies. Has that had an effect on you or your partner agencies, state funding, food funding, as much of that federal? What are you all seeing?
You know, for us directly at the food bank, it has not had an impact as we don't rely on state or federal funding to keep our doors open. However, many of our agency partners do. And it has had an impact where if they're not getting their budget or their funding that they're owed from you know, from whatever resource, maybe they can't have that person still on staff that takes care of the program. Well, if you don't have that person to take care of the program, then the program slowly goes away. And it is definitely trickling down into all areas.
So you all have seen that over the past year?
Yes, we have.
And do you imagine that come January, if the stopgap funding expires, are you concerned about the situation, what will happen in 2017?
You know, personally, I am. You know, we keep seeing stopgap, but not really any resolution. And for, you know, for the agencies that are trying to plan as they're moving forward to how do you plan for something that you don't know if you're going to have money in your bank account and able to support your programs. It's a daunting task that they're going under, and to have to say to someone, I can't help you, is heartbreaking.
And have you found that your agencies have had to, are there agencies that you all work with that have had to do that this year?
We have. We have seen some agencies that have lost their staff and have had to either close or maybe reduce the hours of operation for their programs. We've also seen so many incredible volunteers. You know, volunteers in the nonprofit world are our lifeblood, and that have stepped up. We've seen people forego salaries to keep their programs running. So it's amazing what the individuals in our communities are doing to make sure that people still get served to the best of their ability. But there have definitely been programs that are impacted.
When you mention individuals and volunteers and donations, if someone says they want to help out this time of year, you mentioned financial gifts. How else should people be thinking about helping out this time of year?
You know, I recommend going to eifoodbank.org and going to, you know, going to our webpage. There are so many ways they can help out. If you go to the Find Help page, you can pull up all of our agency partners across our 17-county area. Find one that's near you. Call them up. Maybe donate an hour or two of your time. You know, time is just as valuable. We have food mobiles that we do on the weekends. We have volunteer opportunities. You can also, if the mood strikes you, you can also make an online donation directly to us.
And is this something that's just for adults? Are there opportunities for families to do things together? How are younger to involve children? What's the best thing for people to think about in that?
There are. When you do go to the website, we try really hard to have an offering of things for children. Food mobiles and many of our repacks are for ages 10 and older, just due to some of the safety and some of the things that we're handling. We do offer some family-friendly repacks from time to time. So again, that's on the volunteer page as well. So that way you can find an activity that works for you and your family.
Well, and it's kind of interesting, Teresa, I'm just thinking we've been talking about gifts and gift giving all this hour or helping people out. I wonder what message you, especially if you're thinking about children and other messages that you would love parents or other people to be thinking about. What kind of messages do you give kids this time of year about helping out people who maybe don't have as much as they do?
You know, I think the parents that we see do a tremendous job of when they're bringing their kids in and sharing that message that not everyone has everything that we have. And to be mindful of the fact that everyone has a story. And just because from the outset they might look like they, you know, that they have it all together, you know, teaching your kids empathy and just that people are different and to be top of mind that every little bit helps. So, you know, if your student wants to, you know, participate in that peanut butter drive or what have you, helping encourage that awareness, not only for the holidays, but if you can spark that and it keeps going all year round, how fantastic is that?
That's Teresa Brown. She's the partnership manager with Eastern Illinois Food Bank. As we've said, they serve a 17-county area. Teresa, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me again.
That does it for us today. On tomorrow's program, we're going to be talking about the Electoral College. A reminder, that's actually on Monday, the official election of the next president of the United States. We have a constitutional law scholar with us at the University of Illinois. He's going to talk about how the whole process works and how electors, there's been lots of conversations about people voting, who they're going to vote for. We're going to get into all of that tomorrow. Plus, as we've been talking about tech gifts for the holiday, tomorrow we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about giving books as gifts. We're going to be joined by two librarians from across Illinois. They're going to share their top picks of holiday gifts for books for both adults and children. Also, jazz singer Lucy Smith is going to join us. She's based in Chicago. She's got a new album, Singing Christmas, which came out earlier this month. So that's coming up on tomorrow's program. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app. Search for The 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. All of those links, every other way to contact us, if you want to leave us a voicemail, send us an email, follow us on social media, all you have to remember is our website, 21stshow.org. If you do follow us on Twitter, search for 21ST Show. We live tweet during the show with more analysis and background on what we're talking about. If you look now, we will be tweeting out links about Eastern Illinois Food Bank, for example. On our Facebook page, if you search for the 21st to like us, you can comment on what we're working on or post questions or comments you want us to ask on air. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.